9:05 here on this Wednesday morning. It's the ninth day of January 2019, and I'm John Reed here on News Radio WRVA in the capital city of Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. And Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam is in our studio live this morning. Once a month, the governor comes into our studios and he takes calls from Virginia citizens and takes some questions from those of us here at the radio station. So I'd like to welcome Ralph Northam to the studio again. And Happy New Year to you. Glad to see you.
Happy New Year to you, John, and your listeners. Hope everybody had a good holiday and off to a great start in 2019. Today, as everybody knows, is a busy day in Richmond. It's the opening of our legislative session. So looking forward to some great things happening for Virginia.
Yeah. Well, you have certainly spent the last 4 weeks going around the state unveiling a lot of new proposals, and that's gotten some attention, shall we say. So I know a lot of people want to ask you about those proposals, and I'd like to invite people to call in this morning at 345-1140. 345-1140. That's the number to call, and you'll get an opportunity. I'm going to try to get to as many callers as we can over the course of the hour. And yesterday on the program, Governor, I said, you know, I really enjoy our hour
together
every month, and you're a great guy. We have good conversations on and off the air and everything.
Yes,
but
sir.
Your voter ID proposal really distressed me, and I was a little snarky about it.
Okay.
I want to be polite to you because you've always been polite to me. But why do Democrats always try to make it easier for people to cheat? Now, I don't want to steal this guy's thunder. We've got Corey holding. He's got a question about voter ID. So between Corey and me, you might want to respond to that. Hi, Corey. You're on the air with Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam.
Yeah, thank you, Governor Northam, for being accessible to your constituents in this way. We certainly do appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to get to talk to you. I was just, you know, when I go to my local polling precinct and I have to show my proof of identification that it's me and they match it up with my address, you know, it makes me feel as a Commonwealth citizen comfortable that, you know, nobody else can come in and just boy is me and try to take my vote. How can you assure me, you know, and other voters in Virginia, other constituents, that we're going to have voter accuracy with this new proposal that you have?
Thank you, Corey. You know, up until just a couple years ago, obviously ID is important, but a photo ID was not. And I think that the general premise of certainly what I try to promote in Virginia, I want to make it as least cumbersome to vote as possible so that everybody has a say in our democracy. And obviously we are on the lookout all the time for voter fraud, but there's no evidence that there's a significant amount of fraud because people don't have a photo ID. And what happens, Corey, you and I take a lot for granted sometimes because we have a driver's license. It's easy for us to pull our ID out. But there are about 10% of the population, believe it or not, that don't have a photo ID. And it can be cumbersome for them to get that just with their life situation. So, again, at the end of the day, if there's not a lot of voter fraud out there, then why make someone not be able to vote because they don't have an ID or a photo ID? So I can tell you that, you know, our Board of Elections, we work very hard to make sure that there's no fraud and that every vote counts. And at the end of the day, again, we just want to make it so that everybody has that opportunity.
Don't you think, though, that if you're saying it's 10% of the population that doesn't have an ID, that maybe a more effective and more responsible plan would be to try to help those 10% get the ID that's necessary so that someone like me who does have an ID, and I think most people, you know, figure out how to get one. You just kind of need one to function in America today. Where I feel confident the day after the election that no one was voting in Henrico County and in Goochland County and in the city of Richmond. And the guy who may not be of the same socioeconomic status or the same skin color, the same party as me, has the same confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's important. But, you know, we do things, John, to help people get a photo ID just so that they can vote. But it's still
it's free, it's, right?
It is, but it's still cumbersome for some people. So we just want to, you know, have a level playing field, make sure everybody has the opportunity. And again, I want, you know, a democracy to be as strong as everybody else out there. But let's not do things that impede someone's ability to cast their ballot.
May I push a little bit
Absolutely.
On this, though? Because you know, we had that one House of Delegates seat. There were over 20,000 ballots cast,
right.
And it was tied.
Right.
I mean, we're no longer in a situation where, with you as an exception, people win by 1 or 2 or 3 percentage points. I mean, a lot of these elections are really, really super tight. My old boss, George Allen, lost by over a million votes.
Sure.
It was a very small margin. So it makes it even more important that we verify that only people who should vote on Election Day.
Right.
And this seems like the most fundamental way to ensure that.
Well, that's part of a package. And again, this is something to hopefully eliminate the necessity of having a photo ID. The other thing, though, that I also feel strongly about, and I'd be curious to know what your listeners think, but is no excuse absentee voting. And, mm-hmm. you know, right now there are 20 boxes, 20 excuses that you need to, one of which you would need to come up with to be able to vote mm-hmm. absentee. And again, just to allow everybody access to voting, I mean, we're busy, we're working, our children are doing this and that, we might be out of town, et cetera. There's a lot of reasons. So, you know, let's do like a lot of other states do and get rid of all these boxes that you have to check. And if someone wants to vote absentee, let them vote. And again, it's just I think a goal that I have and that I think we should all have to make it as least cumbersome as possible for people to cast their ballot.
All right. In keeping with this election theme, let's go to Terry, who's holding with another question. Terry, you're on the air with Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Terry. Hope you're doing well.
Yes, sir. And same to you.
Thank you.
My question is pertaining to the voter suggestion that you're making of trying to make available to all people to vote without ID. What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, just to clarify things, Terry, you do need an ID. You need to show proof when you go to the polling station that you are who you say you are. The problem comes where some individuals, and as I said, estimates are around 10% of people that don't have a photo ID. So, you know, why should we shut those people out? So if someone can adequately prove who they are, use an identification other than, for example, a bill that they may have or that shows their address, other than having a photo ID, that's all we're trying to do, Terry.
All right, we've got a whole bunch of folks holding at 345-1140. I want to get to as many callers as we can today because we expected that we would be jam-packed as we head into this legislative session. So let's go to Joe, who has a question about another very controversial proposal that you unveiled recently. Joe, you're on the air with Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam.
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Thanks for calling in.
It's been reported that you're in favor of a 10-round max on weapons, on magazines.
Yes.
And are you aware that would affect, like, thousands, if not tens of thousands, of law-abiding citizens who own either Glocks or ARs, and even maybe your security detail?
Well,
there's no connection between that, this arbitrary number, and crime or incidents or anything else. It's just a number out of thin air.
Well, Joe, first of all, our law enforcement, this would not affect them. So they need to have the best weapons that they can to keep our streets safe. And they do. And I just, they do a tremendous job. So I'm very proud of our law enforcement. It's, as far as the clips, let me just kind of give you my perspective, Joe. I grew up hunting on the Eastern Shore. I have a tremendous respect for guns. As you know, anything that we use, a semi-automatic shotgun has a maximum of 3 rounds. So for hunting and even for protection, I would ask, why do you need a gun even with more than 3 rounds? And then I served in the United States Army, Joe, took care of wounded soldiers during the Desert Storm conflict. And I know all too well what these weapons of war do to human beings. And so I really don't believe that we need them on our streets. We don't need them in our society. They're not weapons that are used for hunting. And I would go as far as they're not even weapons to use to defend yourself. They're not the best weapons to do that. So I don't think there's any need for a clip that holds more than 10 rounds. Those are weapons of war. And I would encourage people, Joe, if you want to have access to a semi-automatic rifle like that holds 15, 20 rounds, join the military, and then you'll have access to do that and protect your country, fight for your country. But we don't need those kind of weapons on our streets.
Well, that'll get them talking, I pretty much guarantee you. We'll take some more calls, and we will talk more about the proposal. And I want you to explain it, Governor, the power of the government to confiscate weapons from individuals in the citizenry who are identified by somebody as a potential threat. This is, you know, this starts to worry a lot of folks. We'll talk about that when we return on Ask the Governor on News Radio WRVA. 9:21 on this Wednesday morning. John Reed with you on News Radio WRVA, where we continue our monthly sit-down with Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam. He is live in the studio here in Richmond today, taking your calls, your comments, your concerns. Here's the number, 345-1140, 345-1140, if you would like to speak directly to the governor today. All right, we're going to continue where we left off before that commercial break, Governor, where we were talking about the gun proposals, the weapons proposals. And I've got Chief Joe, who I'm told is retired Navy, who is on the line, wants to talk to you.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Governor. Sir, with all due respect, I want to know where you would even begin to derive the power to do this thing. The British, when they marched out of Lexington out of Boston Commons to Lexington and Concord, moved forward to seize an arsenal, which was ultimately the power of the people to resist the government. The entire concept of the Second Amendment provides a final check against arbitrary power of government, which you are recommending to be wielded right now. Our weapons that are comparative to those that are employed by our government are the final arbiters of our freedom. Without having these weapons, we have no check against people like you. I want to know where you get the power to do it.
All right. First of all, thank you, Joe, and I appreciate your service in the Navy. Let me just kind of see if I can put things in perspective of where I am as a governor. Last year, we lost 1,028. So 1,028 Virginians to gun accidents. That's a lot of people that died, Joe. 650 of those were by suicide. And let me compare that 1,028 to 950 who lost their lives on our highways. And you and I, Joe, can sit down, I suspect, and have a dialogue that, you know, shouldn't we do everything that we can to make our highways safer? We lost one of our firefighters in Hanover a couple of months ago when he was hit by a passerby that didn't move over when their lights were flashing. We had four state troopers in the last snowstorm that were injured because people were going too fast and didn't move over. And so we're able to sit down and really talk about how we can make our streets safer. And I'm all for that, Joe. But what about those 1,028 Virginians that died from guns, the 650 that killed themselves with firearms, the children, the toddlers that I have taken care of who have picked up a loaded firearm on the bedside table and either shot themselves or their siblings, those that suffer from domestic violence, individuals that have access to firearms that shouldn't, that end up shooting their loved ones. So all I'm asking, Joe, is for us to sit down at the table and have a dialogue and treat the gun-related violence, the tragedies, just as we do those that happen on the street. And I think you and I are obviously not going to always agree, and that's fine. But let's at least have that dialogue and see if we can find some common ground to make things safer for Virginians.
I don't know Joe, but I would suspect that he'd have a lot of sympathy for the stories you're telling. But it sounded like in his voice and what he was articulating that he's very concerned about overreach, government right. overreach, and that what is, I assume, a well-intentioned proposal to try to protect people in another year, another decade, could be used to harm citizens who take exception to what the government wants to do. And, you know, you get somebody who's a tyrant and overzealous, not you, of course, but somebody who wants to silence their opposition. That's
absolutely.
The fear.
And, you know, I support and believe in the Second Amendment. As I said earlier in the show, I grew up hunting, and I have a tremendous respect for firearms. One of the things that Joe might be referring to is our extreme risk law, and that's when we know that someone's at risk of either hurting themselves or someone else. Mm-hmm. This is a piece of legislation that would allow the law enforcement agents and also judges to make a decision to have those individuals release their firearms either to like a neighbor or a friend or whatever until they're deemed not dangerous. And so that's called the extreme risk law. And that's actually been passed in 13 states and signed into law by Republican governors. So again, back to Joe's question, and I understand this is a tough dialogue to have, but let's at least sit down and you know, look at ways we can make our streets and our communities safer.
Now, I was reading on blogs this week after you made this proposal. A lot of conservatives have been very concerned. Yeah, you give the right to the judge to take somebody's weapon. How do you know that they're not going to say, you know what, it's not just a mental health issue here. I don't like the way you're conducting yourself on Facebook. You seem very agitated and angry. You criticize Governor Northam. I think you need to put your gun away for the next couple of months.
It's a great point, John. And you know, I would just tell you, this is a multi-step process, and it starts with law enforcement. And then it goes through the justice system. So it's not just someone coming in and say, well, I don't like your looks or don't like what I've heard, so I'm going to take your gun. So it's a little bit more involved than that. And again, we've seen it passed in 13 other states. Mm-hmm. So Florida, for example, recently passed, and it's a Republican governor there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of debate on the House floor and the Senate floor as the General Assembly rolls on for the next few weeks. Charlie is on the line. Charlie has got a question for the governor. Go ahead.
Hey, Governor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charlie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. We talked previously. I guess my question again is on tax reform.
Okay.
I'm disappointed the legislature didn't take action last year when possibly they could have, but I know Kirk Cox has introduced a bill to rectify this situation of we talked about standard deduction changes. Are you going to sign the legislation if it's passed?
Great question, Charlie. And just to let you know how the process works, you know, I introduce a budget. The House, led by Speaker Cox, introduces a budget, and then the Senate will introduce a budget, and we will all put our heads together. I have, you know, tried to put Virginia in a position where we can react to the federal tax code changes where they increase the standard deduction. The first step, we obviously want to conform with that, and then we can talk about comprehensive tax reform. So there'll be, a very good discussion, Charlie, as we move forward between the House, the Senate, and myself from both sides of the aisle. And basically what we want to do is we want to be fair. We want to do some targeted tax relief, let people keep more of their paycheck each month. We want to put more in our reserves for that, what we call that rainy day. And then we also want to invest in some things that will move Virginia forward, like education, making sure that our children have access to a world-class education, making sure that we're paying our teachers. And then something that I am very adamant about is broadband. There are still pockets in Virginia that don't have access to broadband, so that's a priority of mine. So I think there are a lot of good things that we can do this year with our budget.
You unveiled a lot of proposals right before the holidays. People were calling you the Santa Claus governor there right before Christmas. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about some of those proposals and what the speaker said on our program this morning, where he said he's hopeful you're actually going to back a tax cut and back away from some of the spending plans you've got. We'll talk about it as we continue with Ask the Governor on News Radio WRVA. 9:35 on this Wednesday morning. It's the ninth day of January 2019, and I'm John Reed, live from News Radio WRVA at the State Capitol in Richmond, and it's our monthly opportunity to talk to Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam. He is in the studio here and taking your calls this morning at 345-1140. 345-1140. That's the number to call if you have something on your mind that you would like to share with the governor, a question to ask about some of the proposals that he has made in the last few months. And as the General Assembly opens, as Andy mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, opens today for the short session, the proposals that the governor has unveiled in the last couple of weeks will get a great deal of scrutiny and certainly get a lot of people hyped up. So I want to, Governor, try to make sure that we talk to as many people as we can because they've been holding this morning. So let's start with Carlton, who is holding. Carlton, you're on the air with Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Governor. I previously on Ask the Governor, I had asked you a question about ICE and local and state law enforcement. And the answer was you didn't feel that local and state law enforcement needed to do ICE's job. That was not the question that I asked. Shortly after your inauguration, you mentioned that you didn't feel local and state law enforcement needed to cooperate with ICE. And my question was, do you still feel that way? And if you do, can you explain to people why you feel there should be no cooperation when, since 9/11, law enforcement agencies throughout the country have been admonished for not cooperating with each other?
Carlton, thanks for your call in and for hopefully clarifying some of maybe what I said in the past. I've always thought that our local and state law enforcement should cooperate with ICE. I was trying to make the point that I didn't think the local and state folks should be doing the job of ICE. And so there is the line between the two of, you know, what they do to enforce the laws. And what I have said, and I will continue to say, that I am very proud of our local and state law officials and the way that we can, I think, best keep our streets safe, Carlton, is to make sure that we're first of all paying our law enforcement agents and that we're able to attract and retain the most talented individuals. So that's what I'll continue to do. But there will always, Carlton, be cooperation, I would hope, between our local and state and our ICE officials.
That's a real issue. I mean, your party, the Democrat Party, as led by the Democrats in Washington, is really putting itself in a position that's different than it was even a year ago with this contentious situation with Donald Trump, the government shut down, refusing to even negotiate about the border wall. Can I get your reaction to what's happening in Washington? You watched the president last night and the rebuttal?
I did, and I regret for this country what's going on. And I would hope, John, that all of us would agree that we want border security. I mean, we obviously, we want
doesn't
to be...
Doesn't sound like it.
Hold on
sound
a second
like we
now.
Okay.
We want to be inclusive in the United States. Obviously, we are a country of immigrants, but we want to make sure that we do have secure borders. What I really regret is the discussion that's going on right now in Washington that is holding hostage about 800,000 working Americans. And I just would hope that they can stop this government shutdown, let people get back to their jobs, let them get their paychecks. I was talking to some folks yesterday. Most of us live paycheck to paycheck. And when we don't get that paycheck, if we have a mortgage or want to buy groceries, I mean, whatever, car payment, I mean, that's hard on us. So let's, I'm obviously not up in Washington, but mm-hmm. at least let's sit down, stop this government shutdown, and then kind of have some good dialogue on border security. And whether that involves a wall or a steel fence or whatever mm-hmm. they're talking about, but don't hold these individuals hostage because we can't agree on something.
Well, we do have, 35,000 Virginians who are
Absolutely.
Directly employed by the federal government, a lot of people who are on contract who are probably impacted. But the leverage issue, if you were to talk to Senator Kaine and Senator Warner, your predecessors in the governor's mansion here, would you advocate that they give a little bit or advise that they come to the table and say, all right, President Trump, we want to end the shutdown and we know you want this wall. So here, let's figure out some number that will work for you.
Absolutely. I think everybody's going to have to give something. I mean, that's what compromise is all about. But while they're working out who gives what and how much, uh-huh. let's let these people get back to work and get their paychecks. It's just not fair to them.
All right. We've got another caller. Jerry has been holding for quite some time. Jerry, you're on the air with Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam.
Hi, Governor. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, Jerry. Thanks for your patience, and thanks for calling in.
No problem. My big question is I own, me and my wife own our own business. As soon as the Affordable Care Act came out, we're part of the middle class. I do make a little bit of profit at my business. Insurance company wants it all. Actually, last year's my health insurance is $22,000 with a $12,000 deductible. I mean, that's more than my house payment. That's all my profit gone. What can we do about that?
Good question, Jerry. And as you probably know, I'm a physician, and I've been in the trenches for probably 30 years now. And And there are a lot of different health care plans that are being talked about, catastrophic plans, high deductibles, these types of things. But that doesn't get at, I think it's your question, what the underlying problem is. And the underlying problem is the cost of health care. If we don't sit down and have a discussion and wrap our arms around the escalating costs, then businesses such as yours, I'm also, Jerry, a small business owner, so I can relate to what you're saying. But we need to look at things like putting more of our resources in prevention rather than treating a lot of these disorders that such as cardiovascular disease and hypertension and type 2 diabetes that we can prevent. We need to go to more of a, what I call an outcome-based system rather than a quantity-based system. In other words, I'm still incentivized as a physician to see as many patients as I can. That's how I get paid. And then finally, we need to make sure that we promote what we call individualized health care, where we can collect data and analyze that data and give people the exact treatment for what ails them. So there are a lot of things that we can do, Jerry, to address the cost. I don't hear enough discussion about that in Washington right now, but one of the things that I want to do, I've got 3 years left in the governor's office, and I want to bring people together and really show this country that Virginia can be a model and that we can address those cost issues, because if we don't, it will literally take Virginia, it will take businesses like yours, and it will take this country to our knees.
You know, we just went through this discussion about the Medicaid expansion last year, and it's not your responsibility what the guys in California and New York do, Democrat leaders there, but did it surprise you that Mayor de Blasio talked about granting health care for everybody in New York City yesterday? It caught me off guard.
Yeah.
It's like a big ticket item.
You know, I'm a free market person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I hear people, I'm not sure if they completely understand what they're talking about when they say things like Medicare for all. I am certainly open to universal health care. In other words, I think all of us should have an opportunity to go see a doctor when we're sick. But I'm not in favor of what we call a single payer. So I would want to look at, if you want to call Medicaid for all, having a public option and letting Medicare or Medicaid compete with the private sector, I think we could set up a plan like that. But as far as when people just start throwing these terms out like Medicaid for all, it's confusing, and I'm not sure they always know what they're talking about.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, there was another proposal that you had out there that I think you're working with Republicans on, this the tolls on Interstate 81. And every time you come in, we have somebody who calls about transportation issues.
Great topic.
Sometimes they're sitting stuck on Interstate 95. Yes. So we're going to pick it up on that question when we return here on Ask the Governor on News Radio WRVA. All right, we're back live at the WRVA studios in the state capitol in Richmond for our monthly opportunity to speak directly to Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam, who has been in office for, we're coming up on exactly 1 year. We're just a few days shy of your one-year anniversary.
Time flies when you're having fun, John.
Yeah. Has it been a good first year for you think?
You know, it has been a good year. And, you know, we were able to get some good things done. The thing that, you know, I really appreciate your listeners and your call-ins and the dialogue we're having. But I want everybody to know Virginia's doing very well right now. Our economy is strong. Our unemployment rate is at 2.8%. That's actually the lowest it's been in 17 years now. We just had the agreement with Amazon, 25,000 new jobs to Virginia. Micron invested around $3 billion. I'm going to make another announcement tonight at the State of the Commonwealth, a very prominent company that's coming into rural Virginia, Mecklenburg County. Mm-hmm. So good things are happening in Virginia, and we just need to continue to work together to make sure we're moving in a good direction.
You do have your very significant speech tonight, yes. The State of the Commonwealth address. So you're tipping your hand a little bit, saying that you've got an announcement. Anything else that will be surprising, or you want to tease us anymore about what you'll say tonight?
Well, the main thing, you know, looking back, you know, you said I've been doing this for a year, and I've learned a lot. And one of those things is, you know, to really be respectful of other people's opinions and thoughts. We got 140 legislators that are all looking out for their constituents. They have agendas. And so I came in to the State of the Commonwealth last year, I think with a little bit too much fire in my belly. And I still have fire, but I think I'm going to bring tonight some civility to the process.
It was a different speech. Yeah. Remember, we talked about that. It was a different speech there was a contrast between your campaign speeches and that one. That's interesting that you bring that up a year later.
And it ruffled some feathers. Uh-huh. And I'm tonight I'm going to talk about civility and what we can do if we work together. And obviously, you know, we've got two parties that will be sitting in the chamber. Some will agree with some of what I say, some won't, and that's okay. But I think I want to emphasize that if we work together, we live in the best state and the best country in the world, and so I've got 3 years, and we're going to continue to keep Virginia the best state.
Well, now I got to listen to you tonight to kind of hear how this thing contrasts with last year. I do want to get to the folks who've been holding on the line at 345-1140. Ward has a question. I think, what is this about the toll proposal on I-81, Ward?
Yes, that is correct, John. And Governor, good morning, and thank you very much for taking my call, sir.
Good morning, Ward. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, sir. And my call does concern the proposal in regards to tolling Interstate 81. And as you know, Governor, that area already faces an economic and demographic crisis. And I believe, and a number of others also believe, that tolls are going to dramatically drive up the cost for businesses and manufacturers and everybody in and along the area. So I'm just curious, don't you think that the tolls will unduly burden that local economy? And what would you say, sir, to the business owners and residents of the area who now face tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars in new tolls and taxes each year?
Great question, Ward, and I appreciate it. And let me try to make a long story short. As far as the local businesses, individuals that live along 81 and use it in their daily means of getting back and forth to work will be able to buy an annual pass. And while we don't have a price for that, it's probably going to be $30 or less. And so they would continue to be able to use 81. Here's the big picture, though, Ward. And by the way, the Commonwealth Transportation Board was tasked last year through a piece of legislation to look at what I-81 needed to be upgraded to be safe, more efficient, et cetera. And so a lot of these details, for example, the tolls, whether there'll be tolls, whether there'll be the annual pass, what the cost of them will all be discussed during this upcoming session. So nothing is written in stone as yet. But the big picture, Ward, is that we all know that I-81 is heavily traveled, especially by trucks that are coming from other states. It is an interstate, as we say. It is very, very dangerous. I was just talking to John before we came back on the air. We had 2,000 accidents on I-81 last year. And so we want to make I-81 safer. We want to make it more efficient. And so we know that it will cost about $2.2 billion. That's the estimate, and that's with a B, by the way, Ward. And so the discussion over the next few weeks will be how to pay for that, and whether it will be tolls, taxes, passes. The bottom line is that the $2.2 billion is not going to fall out of the sky, and we've got to find a means of paying for it. And there is bipartisan support to sit down at the table and figure out how to do this.
David is holding on the line. David, you're on the air with Ralph Northam, Virginia's governor.
Hey, good morning, Governor. This is David Merritt. Hope you're having a great day.
I am, David. I appreciate you all calling in. This is what I call taking the pulse of the people out there.
Well, I'll make it quick. I retired from IBM after 17 years and 27 years in the Army before that, and then we purchased an RV and decided to take some trips. And so we were going up Interstate 295 between the just before you get to the Interstate 64 interchange there. And there's a series of bridges there. And those bridges have really difficult, very, very violent entrance and exit ramps, if you will, as you come onto those bridges. Well, as I travel down in a 37-foot RV with a boat behind me, coming off one of those bridges actually broke the tongue on my boat. So I we had it hauled, and while I was gone on vacation, I ended up buying a new boat trailer. And so I promised myself I'd try and stay out of that right lane on 295 mm-hmm. northbound. But I didn't. And later, I guess about 6 months later, I was in the same spot. And doggone if I came off those bridges and it didn't break the bicycle rack on the back of the RV.
It sounds like you've had some bad luck, Dale.
My point is, when I filed a claim with VDOT, very nice people, by the way, on the telephone, when you call in and say you have an issue on the interstate with a piece of the highway, they could not have been kinder. And so they took my claim, and then we stopped at Harvey's for lunch a little bit up near Mechanicsville. The phone rang, and it was a VDOT employee calling already about that issue. The problem was, he said that he'd been trying to get management out to look at those bridges for over 2 years. And they just won't come out and even address it.
Well, that interstate issue is a legitimate one. Trying to keep up with all the roads and bridges around here.
Absolutely.
And I don't mean to cut you off, Dave. We're just running out of time. So let me get the governor's reaction.
Well, obviously, you know, transportation and infrastructure is so important to our economy in Virginia and quality of life for folks like David. So I'm sorry that he had the bad luck. But if he were to call in, we certainly do what we can to help him. But the main thing is we want to be able to move as many people as we can, as efficiently as we can. And so that's really the purpose behind what we're doing on I-81.
All right, we're down to our last couple of moments. Let me get to Mike real quick, who's been holding. Mike, you're on the air with Governor Ralph Northam.
Hello, how you doing?
Good morning, Mike.
Mr. Norton, I just got a question. I'm a bus driver for Chesterfield County.
Yes, sir.
And you know the dilemmas we've been having down here. My biggest thing is you were talking about the budget earlier.
Yes, sir.
Well, they took one day of our pay where we would normally estimate what we pay and took it away from us and said that they would pay us in January for that.
Mm.
Well, if you think about it, roughly $17 an hour times 500 drivers, that's quite a cut in pay.
Absolutely.
We already don't get paid enough.
Absolutely. Mike, and one of the things that I appreciate that, and we're running short on time here, but I have put money in the budget. I think our teachers and staff at our schools, to include bus drivers, need a raise. There's a proposal for several $1 million that will be discretionary funding for our schools. So hopefully we can, you know, sit down and work on both sides of the aisle and get a good budget out of Richmond this year that will help folks like you, that will help our educators, and make sure that we have a strong K-12 public school system.
And we will continue to cover that discussion at the General Assembly about the budget and your proposals, Governor. Appreciate you joining us here this morning. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, once a month with us live here in the studio at News Radio WRVA in Richmond. We are scheduled to meet with you again before the General Assembly wraps up. So we'll look forward to seeing where these proposals are. And we thank you for being with us.
That's great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, sir.